entire reason Donald Trump is talking the way he's talking right now is because he's painted himself in the corner where the best way for him to win, according to his mind, is to juice the stock market, have a high stock market. Hey, what's up, everyone? This is Tim Pichot, the Liberty Advisor, and back with another walk and talk. And what we want to get into today is talk about how central banks around the world actually has $11.7 trillion of negative interest rate bonds around the world. And so, you know, we are approaching 12 trillion. And unbeknownst to me, we were at 12 trillion in September 2016. And then it did dip down. I'm going to say dip down, went all the way down. Actually, it did go all the way down to $6 trillion of negative interest rate bonds. So that's they were able to kind of widen themselves off of that a lot better. Well, temporarily, obviously, than what the Federal Reserve was able to do. And it is funny how that did coalesce around October of last year is when, right now my dogs are going nuts with a little roadrunner that just went across the sidewalk. But before we get into things, I want to remind you guys, you can watch this on BitChute. So you go to BitChute and it's /The Liberty Advisor. Basically all the different social medias I'm on, it's /The Liberty Advisor, except for Facebook, which I'm not really super active on there, although that is the biggest following, which that one is /The Libertarian Advisor. But anyway, support alternative media and support alternative video streaming sites. So I highly encourage you guys to check out BitChute. But enough with the plugging. Actually, one last plug. We will be running a contest at the end of this month. So you guys want to win $100 of Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash, along with 10,000 pre-search tokens. You guys text Liberty Advisor, so not the Liberty Advisor, just Liberty Advisor, one word, to 71441. And now let's get back into the information. So we've got $11.7 trillion of negative yielding bonds. And this is sort of crazy because right now the S&P 500 is just 2% away from its all-time highs. And so when you're at these all-time highs right now, it's really kind of posing a nightmare scenario from the Fed. And so right now I am going to be reading from a Zero Hedge article entitled $11.7 trillion Global Negative Yielding Debt Back to All-Time Highs. And really why this is crazy is, in this reflective feedback loop with the S&P near all-time highs, the unemployment rate is at basically all-time lows. We've got wage inflation is at a point right where they want it at. So they're really sort of running out of excuses to cut rates. I mean, why do you need to cut rates if this is the greatest economy ever? Why do you need to cut rates if we're pretty much at an all-time high in the S&P 500? Why do you need to cut rates if basically unemployment is right where they want it at? I mean, it's all just a shell game where they need, this is all predicated on low interest rates. I know that this is not news to any of the longtime listeners of either myself or Josh or John, but for a lot of people this is news. A lot of people have no idea that we are nearly $12 trillion of negative interest rate debt floating around out there. I'm really surprised it's been able to last this long. I mean, sort of shocked. If you would have told anybody 10 years ago we would have $12 trillion of negative interest rate bonds and that the stock market would be all-time highs and no one would, most people don't even know. I mean, most people listening to this probably have some sort of idea. I'll be honest, it's not really a number that I track, super closely, just because the whole concept of having negative interest rates are sort of, absurd to me, just really to even begin with. I want to get into another article. This one is from MarketWatch that says, basically, traders now see more than 70% chance of Fed rate cut in July. And so we do have a tweet from Steve Leisman saying, Fed funds now pricing in 3 rate cuts this year, but the most interesting trade is the June contract. The cut probably has now shot up 30%. The Fed meets, and this is IEN, meeting just 2 weeks. Will take more econ weakness and maybe Mexican tariffs to get there, but traders are hedging their bets. And so right now it looks like there's a 72% chance of a Fed rate cut at the July 31st meeting, with only a 23% chance of rate cut in the meeting that's gonna happen 2 days from now. And just, I mean, try to contrast this to where we were at in October when, and again, some people are like, hey, this guy is just trying to, data mine people. He's trying to get everyone to opt into his email. I mean, the last real email that I sent out to everyone that opted in was October 3rd, 2018, where basically I went on to predict a lot of what was going on. And this was actually dates back to other you know, podcasts that I put out, you know, some of them over probably now, probably over a year and a half ago, if you go back to basically what I was saying was going to coalesce in October. So not only did you have the negative interest rate yielding debt, you know, peak out or peak, I guess, hit a low point in October, but you also had the Federal Reserve was selling off $50 billion a month. I need to make sure I watch where I'm going here, because the other day I didn't notice that there was a snake that someone had alerted me to. But you had the Federal Reserve selling $50 billion a month in bonds. That peaked out in October. At the same point, you had the government was going to be, you know, it looked like it was definitely going to be over $1 trillion in debt for this upcoming year, which obviously, you know, I think we're at like 800 right now. So we are very closely approaching that $1 trillion mark. And we really did go up over $1 trillion in debt last year, if you look at how much we actually spent versus what we took in. It did go up over $1 trillion, but the official number wasn't over $1 trillion because they don't count a lot of stuff in the official number. So if you spend, let's say, you know, $500 billion on disaster relief, which we didn't, I just threw that number out there. That number, since it's not part of the official budget, even though we spent it, doesn't count. And so there's all sorts of ways that they game that, rig that. So you had, you know, the negative debt peaking out. You had Federal Reserve selling $50 billion a month. You had at the same time that we're trying to start a trade war with China, who traditionally, along with Japan, had been one of the biggest buyers of our debt. The second biggest, or the first biggest buyer of our debt was the Fed, and now they were going to become the biggest seller. And I knew that there was no way that the interest rates could stay down in that type of environment. And it was something where, you know, I've been calling it out for over a year and a half in advance. I mean, one of the podcasts that I made that was probably one of the more popular ones I did, it was a very short one, and it was called The Perfect Storm is Brewing. That was made of May in 2018. I did point to the trade war with China also as a potential perfect storm that was brewing. But what we saw was, after that October 3rd email that I came out with, I think it was the very next day or maybe 2 days later, Jerome Powell came out and said that we're on autopilot, everything is fine, and everyone else, you know, was completely agreeing with that. And so for me to come out with a video that was specifically actually to my clients, you know, I was really putting myself out there. And, you know, to many of you watching this, especially longtime listeners, it's probably, you know, probably not crazy to you guys, but, you know, make sure that this information does get shared, because there's a lot of people out there who have no idea that we're $11.7 trillion in negative interest rate bonds. They have no idea that this entire, basically, you know, quote-unquote recovery has been predicated on central bank money printing. And there's a lot of people who have no idea that Donald Trump has actually basically reversed himself on many different things that he had talked about in the past. I mean, most probably notably on the stock market in June of 2016 is when he called it a big fat ugly bubble. But now that big fat ugly bubble is what he is banking on in order to get reelected again. So it is sort of disgusting when, you know, when he was calling out the unemployment number, I believe in one of the first presentations I gave to you guys, which was an actual presentation at Anarch Arizona. I think I pointed out 26 times, or maybe 20, it was over 20 times, where he called the unemployment number a fake number. At one point he said, this is a number that's only used by politicians and I think it was politicians and presidents in order to make themselves look good. And so he was so on point with so many things that candidate Trump was saying, you know, whether it was, you know, calling out, I mean, he said the Fed right now is doing political things. They're only keeping the stock market, they're only keeping interest rates low to help out Hillary Clinton. And so, and then when seeing him calling out, you know, Janet Yellen and calling out the Fed and calling out, you know, basically saying, you know, audit the Fed, it's so important, you know, because in regards to Ted Cruz missing a vote for it, you know, he said so many things to basically call dog whistles to, you know, this type of movement, you know, the greater, you know, I guess, liberty movement, so to speak, you know, like the original Tea Party before it got hijacked by the, you know, Fox News crowd. It's just very, very depressing seeing, you know, complete 180s and then seeing people who then get mad at me saying that I'm abandoning the president when, in essence, you know, he is the one I feel like that abandoned us. And I, you know, shouldn't have, I guess I did get caught, you know, caught up in it. But, you know, I can be, you know, at least man enough to realize when, you know, I made a mistake, or I'm not going to, you know, it shouldn't be, you know, like we're on a team, like, okay, you know, the red team versus the blue team. And just because, you know, this other team is bad that I've got to endorse the other one, because right now both teams suck. I mean, this is all, you know, this, the entire reason Donald Trump is talking the way he's talking right now is because he's painted himself in the corner where the best way for him to win, according to his mind, is to juice the stock market, have a high stock market, because they're using the word stock market and economy simultaneously. So if you can point to a record high stock market, then you can point to the fact that this is the best economy in the world, supposedly. Now, there's been lots of, if you look, take a look at the growth of the stock market since 1926, I mean, on average, it's gone up 10% a year. And a lot of those years, they weren't having to print tons of money. They weren't having to have negative central bank rates around the world, which then leads to American bonds being a relatively better, more attractive offer. So if you can get, you know, 2% on a U.S. bond and you can get negative 1% on a Swedish bond, then what are you going to do? I mean, so that's really the conundrum a lot of people are in around the world, and that's why it's making the U.S. stock market and U.S. bond markets look more attractive than they otherwise would be. And these imbalances are really playing out. If you take a look at the fund flows, the past 6 months, there's been a record $47 billion flowing into U.S. government bond funds. And so, you know, the reason for that is, you know, like I just mentioned before, if other countries you're getting negative rates, and here you're getting, you know, at least something, then people would rather have something than nothing, or sometimes, you know, even negative. And this also plays out in the stock market, where we've seen, you know, a dramatic flip, where now that it looks like central banks are going to be easing, what we've seen is, you know, a big shift of people now willing to take on a lot more risk. So we had, this article goes on to say, more tactically, institutional S&P 500 open positions interest flipped from negative $446 billion to positive $333 billion in the past week as investors covered short positions, seemingly expecting an even more dovish surprise by the Fed. So what this means, I guess, in non-geek time. Hey, Yoshi, let's get over here. Okay, he's all tangled up. So hold on a second as I will. So what this means in non-geek terms, I guess it's really hard to explain it in non-geek terms, but the traders were basically betting massively on the stock market going down. And then within the span of 1 week, that entirely flipped, where, you know, almost symmetrically, where you had, I think it was negative $400 billion, was the amount that people were betting against the market. And then 1 week later, it was positive $333 billion. So also a very Illuminati-like number. So it's funny how they always throw those things in there, although I'm not really suggesting that, just pointing out from a numerology standpoint. So anyways, just want to, you know, further paint the correlation between the stock market and really, you know, just central bank activity in general. And that is really what has been juicing everything. And there's really going to have to be at some point a limit as to what they can do. And I think somewhere in this article, even at the very end, it even goes on to say where even PIMCO says, you know, hey, how many more times can they really have this trick be played out? And so let me just go ahead and read this for you guys. It says, in other words, there is a growth bubble as value investors go extinct. And so I remember, like, right as I started getting into investing, I read Benjamin Graham's The Value Investor. This was probably 2007. So actually, I remember being over my in-laws, before they were my in-laws, at Christmas time reading that right before the market went down. So it's sort of funny, you know, that my investing career, you know, I started on my financial job on September 15th, 2008, the day the market, day Lehman Brothers crashes. You know, I go on the floor of the stock exchange the last time in November 2007, almost at the exact high. You know, there's just so many just different weird things. But anyways, you know, as value investors go extinct, and it is all a function of the Fed and central banks once again throwing in the towel and turning uber dovish once again, and the what may be the last race to the rate / currency bottom perhaps ever, if, as PIMCO speculated, this will be the end with that this will all end with the Fed losing control of the market. And they are going to eventually lose control of the market. I think eventually the market is, and that's the stock market and the bond market, but it will be once they lose control of the bond market is what could then trigger something in the stock market, unless they decided to print, you know, tens of trillions of dollars, and then the stock market just goes to infinity. So we do have an investing strategy that basically covers both of those bases. And it was a strategy that I did lay out to the opt-in email on October 3rd, where I had said ahead of time how I'd already positioned people's portfolios. So this was not me Monday morning quarterbacking things. And basically my clients saw very little volatility, very little, nobody was calling me up panicked. Nobody was calling me up, losing sleep. And so when you're close to retirement, you don't want to be dealing with things like having to worry about, you know, is my money still going to be there? Am I going to have enough money in retirement? How many people even know if they have enough money in retirement? And as people live longer, it's a much, much tougher thing for people to plan for. And that's what how I help people out. So if you guys need help in that area, you can email me directly at tim@innovativewealth.com. You can go back and check out, you know, basically 3 years worth of podcasts to go back and audit me. You can go back on Facebook pretty much since the day it was created to go back and audit what I was saying. Because my tune, you know, has not really changed. I've admitted when I was wrong. I've, you know, have made some mistakes here or there. But, you know, you just need to be right 51% of the time in this business to, you know, eventually become, you know, a millionaire. And becoming a millionaire is not that big of a deal. I mean, if you got $1 million, you're going to be living off $40,000 a year in income. And if that $40,000 a year in income is 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, it might be like the equivalent of like $10,000 a year in today's dollars. So this is something that people are massively, underestimating what it's really going to take to retire. And a lot of people don't have, you know, things like cryptocurrencies in the portfolios. They don't have gold or precious metals in the portfolios. And I'm not saying somebody needs to have massive positions in these instruments in order to, you know, be able to retire. And some of the people, a lot of my current clients, unless they actually know the risk and understand cryptocurrencies, I'm not pushing it on them. So this is all, you know, for informational purposes only. I hope, you know, basically that you guys aren't, you know, too upset that this wasn't, you know, super well put together. It basically comes down to this week I've got my kids who are only going to be basically away till 3 o'clock because of the babysitter situation, and I couldn't sneak in a workout, walking the dog, and making a video, so I thought that I would do all three at once. But anyways, this is Tim Pichot, the Liberty Advisor. Make sure you guys text that opt-in. It's Liberty Advisor to 71441. Only have got about like, I think like 55, 60 people registered now. So you do have a pretty good chance. About $200 is on the line, depending on the value of the 10,000 pre-search tokens and $100 of either Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash. But anyways, Tim Pichot with World Alternative Media. Find the truth, be the change.